Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Welcome in, everybody, to another edition of the Go 24/7 podcast. I'm Matthew Bruni, and joining me once again for the new year is Shay Dixon. Shay, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. We were both there at the women's bat. We're recording this on a Friday, so we were at the women's game last night at the Whiteout. Definitely the best crowd we've seen, certainly since your time on the beat, but in a long time. T-shirts out for everyone. They got out to a big early lead. You can read about Matthew's breakdown on the site, but I guess any initial thoughts on what you've seen, a 14-2 basketball team now that really has no business probably pushing the number one team in the country to the brink, but they did, up double digits and then sort of let it slip. What was Kim's reaction? That's what we really need.
She was, you could tell she was just like, they're bigger than us. Is like, what do you want us to do? Like they have like the best big women and the big girl in the country, Aaliyah Boston. So that's what's kind of, but it was awesome. Like you said, I was like over 9,000 people there. Alex Bregman was there. Alvin Kamara was there. Simone Augustus was there, obviously. So a lot of fun. Highly recommend for anybody who hasn't been to a women's basketball game to check it out. Cause I mean, they're like a top three team in the SEC and I did not see that coming. So it's a lot of fun. And then we got a basketball men's game on Saturday.
Tennessee. And this is purely football podcast, really, but we'll finish up here with some thoughts on the last night's game. The Boston girl, first off, she was a bucket in purple hair. I Googled her, right. And she doesn't always have purple hair. So I don't know if she was just straight trolling or what she was up to, but she dropped 19 and 18 and literally got every offensive board you could imagine. And I walked out of the PMAC and I Googled her and I said, if this girl wasn't like some top five prospect, throw the Hoop Girls rankings out.
Yeah.
Number one center, number three player in the country, and she's a junior in the country, and then keeps them until they're juniors. And we'll see what that looks like. But fun watching all the girls. KP, certified bucket. A bunch of the other girls kind of had their moments last night. I think they had three of them in double digits, but got into a little foul trouble. It was all good. I thought when they were up double digits, I was like, this, if Dawn Staley doesn't reel them in, this could get kind of nasty here.
I thought so too.
Sure enough, LSU took some bad shots and South Carolina just chiseled their way right back into the game and took the lead and never looked back.
Yeah. But like you said, I was like, is LSU actually going to like win this game? For a moment, I was like, are we watching like a top five team in the country and we don't even know it right now? And they still could be. I mean, they're probably a top 10 team in the country at this point. So it's going to be really interesting to see how they do moving forward, especially they've played three ranked teams to this point. And it's the same with the men's. Both of them just started off with really front heavy schedules. So we'll see how basketball continues to go at that front at that point. But we got a lot of football to talk about. Obviously, it's been a couple weeks since our last podcast. And since then, the football team has wrapped up their season now officially, even though it did feel like the season was over when they beat A&M on the last week of the season. But they played Kansas State in the Texas Bowl, lost 42-20. We did get to see John Trey Kirkland at quarterback for those who wanted to see that. And I don't even think they had many other options there since one of the other walk-on quarterbacks got hurt as well, right? And so it was only Tavion Falk and John Trey Kirkland were the two options. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. And what I think, who did Neighbors get some direct snaps maybe? And then on the last play of the game, Jack Mashburn was the quarterback and then tossed it to, I guess, handed it off and then tossed it to John Trey for the, what was a, that last play was probably their best deep ball throw of the season. I mean, that was a dive spiral on the, right in Chris Hilton's breadbasket running across midfield. So that was probably for me. No, we won't go into the bowl game much, but I will comment that it was fun watching the guys who showed up and played and laid it all out there. And certainly everyone across the SEC sort of commended them for that because, you know, the A&M backed out of their bowl game very early. LSU had way less players, certainly could have had an excuse to back out with the coaching transition. Basically, it was all analysts out there coaching minus a few spots, but They buckled in. Obviously, K-State was just going to out-physical them and run on them, and they did. But the last play was cool because K-State had just been celebrating nonstop pretty much the whole game. And it happened as time expired. So the K-State fans like weren't cheering because it was a touchdown, but they'd also won the game.
Yeah.
And then all the LSU fans were going wild and cheering, even though they had lost the game. And so it was just sort of an odd moment where like LSU was just laughing like, hot, that's awesome. And K-State fans were like, well, I guess we're happy we won, yeah. But we also, LSU's cheering. So this is weird.
Obviously it's not the position. Yeah, obviously it's not the position LSU wants to be in, but this is kind of, again, from my time covering North Texas and some G5's programs, that's what it felt like, right? Like you get the late touchdown just to stick it to them one more time as the underdog. So, but yeah, I watched the second half of the game because the first half I was at Kentucky, LSU versus Kentucky men's basketball. And so I watched the second half and I was like, okay, good. I didn't really miss anything here as far as just like
– nope.
Major takeaways or nothing. There was nothing crazy there, but I, like you said, I'm glad everyone fought hard. I mean, to have 38 scholarship players and to put up a fight in a bowl game is fun, especially Kansas State had everybody, Deuce Vaughn, Skylar Thompson, you got on the list of players. So, yeah, that happened on January 4th. We're recording this on the 7th. And since we've last done a podcast, there've been a lot of staff hires, Shay, there. We can run through it. The guys that I have focused on have been the offense coordinator, defense coordinator, offense coordinator, Mike Denbrock, quarterbacks coach, the new quarterbacks coach, Joe Sloan from Louisiana Tech, running back coach, Frank Wilson, offensive line coach, Brad Davis being retained, defensive coordinator and linebackers coach, Matt House, defensive lines coach, Jamar Kane, defensive backs coach, Kerry Cooks, defensive backs coach, Robert Steeples, and special teams coach, Brian Polian. So where do you want to start when we look at all the coaching hires?
Well, and we'll add this, that they have one more spot available that they haven't announced who it would be. We're presuming that's probably on offense, whether it's if Frank Wilson's the running backs coach, then are they who's the wide receivers coach, or yeah. Is it a wide receivers tight ends coach? Kind of how do they shift out the responsibilities? Because so far it was outside of the coordinators, it was just an assistant on that side of the ball, and you kind of put the pieces together from there. So I will note one more hire. We're expecting on-field hires still to come, but let's start with the coordinators. And I guess I'll ask you about this because you did two pieces, one on Mike Denbrock, who was Cincinnati's offensive coordinator, and then one on the defensive coordinator, Matt House, who had been at Kentucky prior to his stop at the Kansas City Chiefs. And you kind of looked at what how he fared in the SEC. You did Denbrock first. Let's start there. I'll give the backstory. You give your immediate takeaways. These two, Brian Kelly and Denbrock, have worked together before at multiple stops. And whenever Denbrock's name got floated around, it made sense for those reasons, right? Like they've got familiarity with each other. Denbrock's, you know, an OC at a place that, yes, Brian Kelly's been before. They were together at Notre Dame, but now at Cincinnati, they've been in the spotlight. They've run a good offense. They've certainly gotten into the college football playoffs, ran into a buzzsaw against Alabama, obviously. But the next day, the word comes out, what, that Denbrock is taking the LSU job. And not a surprise. It had sort of already been reported a bit. But now LSU fans say, okay, cool. What does that mean? What are we getting? So get us into the simplest form of it here, Matty B. Is it an I-form attack? Is it a shotgun attack? Are they under center? Is it a spread offense? How would you – what sort of pocket does Mike Denbrock's philosophy fall into?
Yeah, for those who want to read the story, like she said, it's on our site. You might have to do a little bit of digging at this point. It's a couple of days old, but Mike Denbrock analysis, I think, will get you there in the SEOs. But it is more of a spread concept. They did use a lot more 12 personnel, which is one running back and two tight ends type stuff this past year and in his time at Cincinnati. I could see that expanding a bit to just more 11 personnel with the receiver talent that he's going to have at LSU. He does seem like he is capable. I mean, he is encouraging his quarterbacks to be a little bit more mobile and, you know, roll out a little bit more. It gives them a little bit of freedom in that respect. He's not afraid to take shots. I really like the RPO stuff he has just to give, and the pre-snap motion stuff that really gets defenses off balance. So that's kind of the generic version of it all. I have obviously video clips in the story and everything like that to give you a really, really good breakdown of it. And I'm not a coach, so that's I always preface it by saying that. But, you know, just looking at it, it is an offense that is exciting because I think it hits on a lot of things that we wanted from Jake Peets, just in terms of aggressiveness and being able to counter things that a defense does to take away your first option. And I think he just kind of runs it better than what LSU did this year, right? So it's not going to be, I don't think it's going to be a complete overhaul like maybe the defense could be, even though I'm, you know, shaky on that. But it is going to be something I think fans are going to enjoy. And I was skeptical going in because a lot of it was like, oh, Cincinnati. And, you know, the fans, when they got announced, it's like they just didn't score a touchdown against Alabama, you know, and they looked overmatched. I was like, yeah, it's Alabama. I don't know what you want me to tell you here. Like, they can't match up for them on the offensive line. It was pretty clear they couldn't block them. So I do think Denbrock's style is going to be something that can work. And it's just about implementing it. It's about getting the right quarterback, because he's had Desmond Ridder. He's had DeShone Kizer when he was at Notre Dame. So he's had a little bit more mobile guys. And, you know, Miles Brennan isn't slow. He's pretty fast. So we'll see how he uses him or Garrett Nussmeier as well in that system.
What? Okay. So philosophy wise, we heard Brian Kelly say he was telling recruits, this was from the mouths of recruits, that I haven't hired an OC yet. This is before Denbrock got announced, but it'll be my offense. So when you watch Notre Dame and now you've watched Denbrock, how much are they aligned? And maybe I presume that means run to set stuff up. It seems yes. Both seem to like to run the ball.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. They ran the ball, I believe it was 53% of the time last year, Cincinnati did. And I believe Notre Dame was around that range as well. So it all kind of starts with the run. And I think that's where the offensive line is just going to be huge. We knew that going in, Brian Kelly's offensive lines were going to be the staple of this offense. If he can manufacture offensive lines, the offensive line talent he had at Notre Dame, I think that LSU is going to be in a really good hand, because off of that, I can see Denbrock's passing schemes kind of off of the run really, really well. So if Brian Kelly comes in, it's like, you know, obviously you want to establish the run. And I think one thing we forget is early in the LSU season, just how much they did not run the ball, because Ty Davis Price had the Florida game. And we thought, you know, late in the year, we're like, okay, they can run the ball now. Early in the year, the LSU didn't run the ball at all. And so I don't think that's an option under Brian Kelly and under Denbrock. I think it's pivotal. And I think if nothing else, they're going to attempt it in every single game. So yeah, no, you hit it the nail on the head. The run game is going to be kind of the common denominator between the two. And then what they do off the run game, I think, is where Denbrock can really excel.
You touched on in your piece as well about interesting wrinkles that Denbrock's had when he's had a quarterback who can run the ball. And you noted they'll give it to him 6, 7, 8 times a game on designed quarterback runs. Miles Brennan, I guess, to me, wouldn't fit that. Like, he's had multiple injuries. Are you really trying to run him the whole time? He could be a pocket passer for you. Where do you see beyond? Okay, we know what they'll get from Brennan. We've seen him play even in 3 games. He was an 1,100 yard passer. He can throw the football, probably won't run it a ton, but does Walker and Nussmeier and maybe who they have in the future trend more towards mobile quarterbacks?
I think, you know, because Max Johnson, I think, is the most mobile out of that group. And obviously he's gone. So I think you look at Nussmeier and I think he can throw on the run. I don't look at him as a runner. Walker Howard's another guy I think can throw on the run, but isn't quite that Desmond Ridder type, you know, that we saw with Cincinnati this year, where they were running quarterback powers, quarterback draws. And so that is an element I'm interested to see, is how does he use Miles Brennan? Cause I need to see Miles Brennan more, you know, since we've seen him last, which is 3 games into the year in 2020. But I just don't know if quarterback read options is going to be the type of thing that Denbrock's going to install. I think it's going to be kind of, I don't want to say basic starting off, but it's going to be probably more just start off with the run, establish the run, and then just pass concepts off that. So I don't see it being as dynamic as far as with the quarterback run game early on in his career. So we'll see. And he's also, not to take a shot, DeShone Kizer. DeShone Kizer was a second round quarterback. He's a good quarterback. And Desmond Ridder was a really good quarterback as well. So, but these quarterbacks that he has in the room this year and moving forward are going to be kind of just really, really good passers of the football. So we'll see what he does with that. If he expands off of that as well, there's a lot of unknown, I think, going into this because Denbrock and Kelly haven't worked together since what, 2016, I believe.
What, when you think about as well, and we'll wrap up with this question and then we'll switch to defense, but you talked about the philosophy. They'll run two tight ends at times. He'll still spread it out, but run it. We talked about the mobile quarterback usage, and you pointed out in here that at different points in his career is really favored when he gets one-on-one matchups with, you know, their guy, they like to take, he'll take the deep shots. And so you could say, okay, if he sees Kayshon Boutte is getting one-on-one coverage without safety help, he's going deep to him. If you think from Will Fuller to, you know, whomever Cincinnati's had, they've never had a Boutte. Fuller is certainly a great player, but a Boutte and a Neighbors and a Thomas and a Jenkins, and, you know, you continue to go Jack Besh, you go down the line.
Yeah.
Are you curious to see if that forces Denbrock or allows Denbrock to maybe stray from what his normal philosophy might be, given you're going to have more weapons at receiver than you've ever had? You can run the ball all you want, but you've got options when you, if you want to throw the football.
For sure. And that's the one thing when, I mean, I watched the Notre Dame back in 2015, and then I watched them Cincinnati this year, and Cincinnati against Houston especially, and that's where the athletes are kind of comparable on the outside, and he threw a lot of one-on-one stuff, like just a lot of, if he saw that it was a one-on-one matchup on the outside, he gave Ritter that green light a lot. So that is an area that I'm really fascinated to see, because it felt like Denbrock, just watching his offenses, it felt like, all right, this is what my team is good at, and this is the skill set that we have. And if you give him a Kayshon Boutte, Malik Neighbors, good on the list of talented receivers that LSU has and can get, this could be really, really exciting and dynamic, because I think he's an aggressive offensive coordinator. I think he's, even though he lines up in like 12 personnel at times and can line up a little heavy, he's not, I mean, he looks for the explosive plays, I think, more than people give him credit for. So that is something I'm looking forward to seeing from him.
We'll flip over to the defensive side now. Matt House, he was with the Kansas City Chiefs as the linebackers coach. But before that, he was at Kentucky and for a few years. And Kentucky's obviously been very good across a stretch of time now under Stoops, where they've continued to be competitive in the SEC East and get big wins over teams like Florida. Let's start just basic concept. Is it fair to say that he is a 3-3-5 staple type person, or is this a multiple defense type look?
At Kentucky, it was a 3-3-5 pretty comfortably. I could see it being a little more multiple, maybe 4-2-5 type stuff. I can see him being a little bit more versatile with the personnel he gets at LSU, but at Kentucky, man, it was 3-3-5 all the way. And he had Josh Allen as an outside linebacker. And that was the most interesting part of the defense, is you have that Jack linebacker that can blitz a quarterback, and Josh Allen ends up with 17 sacks on the year. So again, y'all can check out the story. It's on the site, but that 3-3-5 was really interesting to me, because it does lend itself to some versatility and some of the talent that LSU has. It does put a lot of pressure on the linebackers, but the defensive lineman that LSU is going to have next year, I think, can really cause havoc. Like Kentucky that year was creating a lot of havoc on the defensive line, and I think that is an area where LSU can kind of follow that their footsteps there. I will say, though, it has been, what, 3-4 years since House has been in college. I mean, he's been in the NFL. Maybe he takes some NFL concepts that he saw. I am very open to this being different than what it was in 2018 for Kentucky. But just looking at that 2018 film of Kentucky, it is a aggressive defense, a zone heavy defense, and something that worked really well for them. Obviously, I think they held teams like 16 points a game that year. So great resume, great defensive coach. And I'm excited to see how he schemes it up at LSU.
Let's say it's a 3-3-5, Matty B. Where does B.J. Ojulari – people would say that B.J. Ojulari might be their best returning defender. I know Mason Smith, there's a lot of really good young guys, but Ojulari will be a junior. His brother was a first-round draft pick. He's already said he's coming back, not transferring out. He seems to continue to get better and better. He was the third-down pass rush specialist for a lot of time. Then he became a full-time starter when they didn't have anybody else. But he's starting. How big of a piece is he to a defense like what House wants to do?
He's probably the most important piece, honestly. And that's where, like I said, that Josh Allen outside linebacker type role, we saw BJ Ojulari kind of touch on the outside linebacker when they went to 3-4 this year, once after the bye week. And Ojulari and Mike Jones at the outside linebacker positions did really well. I think Ojulari is more of that aggressive outside linebacker slash defensive end that House would use in that 3-3-5 system. And that's what's exciting to me. And I think that's what has the fans excited, is kind of unlocking BJ Ojulari on the outside there, because he is so versatile. He is so fast. He's so talented. And you give him that opportunity, I mean, we could be looking at a guy that ends the year with double digit sacks. And if that's the case, I mean, you open it up for Mason Smith, you open it up for other really talented defensive linemen to go from there. So I think that that position is probably the most important. Obviously the other two linebacker positions are important too, as well in a 3-3-5, and we'll have to see how they fill it out, whether that is Mike Jones, Greg Penn, you go on a list of players. But I mean, that spot specifically is going to be fascinating to me if it is in fact a 3-3-5 over type scheme that House runs.
Man, I guess we'll wrap up there. You kind of mentioned in here, he's been in the NFL. If you're at LSU, do you trend to more NFL type schemes? Are you going to run a 4-2-5? So kind of your gut tells you there might be some flexibility in here in terms of we'll see. Look, he's got a spring and a summer and a fall camp to feel it out, but this could be multiple. This could be a thing where, you know, they have some 4-2-5 looks, they have some 3-3-5 looks, and it's kind of able to, you know, keep people on their feet in terms of, you know, how they're going to defend you.
Yeah. Definitely I could see it changing up. I mean, even if they wanted to go to like a 3-4, I think could be really interesting, because we saw 3-4 this year be really successful with Ojulari and Jones on the outside. And then you kind of fill it in with the linebackers from there. So I think there's a lot of options for him. I think he's going to be aggressive, and I think that that's going to be really exciting, because we've seen him do really good work at Kentucky, and you give him these LSU athletes, and that's going to be exciting. Now, when we look at the, I want to flip it to you for a second. When you look at the assistant coaches that they've brought in from a recruiting standpoint and just a personnel standpoint, just how do you feel about them as a whole and what they bring?
I'll give you the two biggest new hires that I think they made. On the offense, well, one side would be Frank Wilson. I think if you're Brian Kelly, you're coming from a career Midwest, Northeast guy, 30 years of coaching up there, head coaching, and you haven't been in the SEC, you haven't been in Louisiana, you know you were going to have to hire some guys on staff that knew how to recruit the state. You couldn't have hired a bigger name than Frank Wilson. You mentioned he's been head coaching experience at UTSA, then at McNeese, but prior to that, he was at LSU. He was running things as recruiting coordinator during the Les Miles era, and was really known for basically being involved in every on the recruiting board, most notably in Louisiana. He would help go get it done. So if you're worried about Kelly not knowing everybody down here, or maybe he's not as big of a recruiter, certainly like a guy like Orgeron, who's known as a head coach, really recruiting with being there across, you know, with every kid and having a relationship. If Kelly's more of the type who's the head coach, hey, I'm going to delegate that out to other people. Frank Wilson's a massive hire. It doesn't get bigger than that. He can help stabilize things in Louisiana. I thought that was huge. The flip side of that would be Brian Polian, I think, because Polian does have familiarity with Kelly, a lot of it. So he's a guy who I think can take a lot of what he expects Kelly to, you know, or what he knows Kelly's going to expect, how he knows that Kelly wants things to run. I've already seen Polian has sort of led the charge on the transfer portal. They got Miles Frazier. They got a long snapper, Brennan, obviously. But he's the guy kind of handing out offers and sort of feeling out that bridging the gap on how to rebuild the roster. Notre Dame, he had a recruiting coordinator title. They haven't given out that title yet. At LSU, you'd presume it'd be him or Frank Wilson. So I think those two guys are massive pieces. They help with recruiting. They help with team, you know, everything. You look from there, the one guy who was retained was Brad Davis. And Matty B, I think you have to feel like, especially with what you saw from him through the bowl game, and we got to hear him speak, and we got to hear the players talk about kind of what he means to them. I think Brad Davis won over the team across that stretch, and they really have a lot of respect for him. And we saw the O-line. Look, he had just gotten here. They signed four or five guys. Some of them were even committed. Campbell and them were committed before Brad Davis even got here. But those guys also, they had a great relationship with him. I guess you can share your thoughts, but I like that hire a lot.
Definitely. I mean, we talked about, obviously, Corey Raymond leaving and other position coaches leaving, Andre Carter as well. So it felt like you had to keep somebody from the past staff just for continuity's sake, just a bit. And who better to keep than the interim head coach of a bowl game that they had a whole month to spend with him. And while Coach Carter and Coach Raymond, obviously, and all the position coaches that they had.
Yeah, Baker was great.
Yeah, Baker. I mean, all of them, they're great coaches. You're going to get great coaches at LSU. But when you have a coaching change, you have to change things. Like, you can't just expect him to retain half of the staff here and move forward, especially with a guy as pedigreed as Brian Kelly, who obviously knows what he's doing. So that was never really a problem to me. Like, obviously, you want to keep Corey Ram, you want to keep Mickey Joseph and all those guys. But at the end of the day, it happens. It's part of turnover. And it's part of, if you really want to rebuild this program, you have to rebuild it from the bottom up. And so that's where it kind of starts. And so I don't think anything was wrong with any of those coaches. It's part of the rebuilding process. And so that's what's going to be interesting to me, is how Kelly, not only how he constructs this coaching staff, because it's almost done to this point, but how they kind of approach the talent acquisition aspect and then just building relationships as well. So that's what I'm excited to see moving forward here. Do you got anything else on the coaching staff before we move forward?
Yeah. I like Joe Sloan on the offensive side. They hired him from La Tech. He was serving as the interim head coach during their transition, but had been offensive coordinator. And the other one was Mark Kane, and that was the most recently announced for LSU. But he'll be the D-line coach. He comes from Oklahoma, and that one really is just interesting off the base of the fact that he was on the Oklahoma staff. Lincoln Riley wanted to take him to USC. He said, okay, but I'm staying at Oklahoma through the bowl game. And the kids all love him. They respected that. He's recruited really well. And then whenever Oklahoma season ends and he packs up to move out west to join the staff at USC, Brian Kelly and LSU sweep in. They offer more. They get a deal done. Now he'll be the D-line coach at LSU. That was officially announced now. And everybody at OU were happy that he's burned Lincoln Riley after they got burned by Lincoln Riley. But they said, look, you're getting a knockdown. He's been recruiting all over the country because that's kind of what you got to do at Oklahoma. And the players on the roster seem to have developed well. He's risen up the ranks quickly because he was at a bunch of other schools doing really well, Arizona State. Sort of kept moving up all the way to OU and now LSU. So I don't point to any of these hires yet and say, like, I don't get it. Like, that guy's like 7 years. He's from the NFL and it's a retread hire. Like, none of that's really going on right now.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
All right, Shay, let's move on to the roster turnover, because as we know here at LSU, there has been plenty of that, whether it is players declaring for the draft or the transfer portal. Where do you want to start when we look at roster turnover? I don't know if we have to go through all the names we have here on the list, but where do you want to start?
Okay, so obviously, you know, a lot of guys don't have eligibility left. Austin Deculus would be one, Liam Shanahan, Glenn Logan, Andre Anthony. These guys were all seniors who used that COVID year and came back for another year. Trying to see if there might be Cameron Lewis, Darren Evans. So there's guys that weren't able to come back. So let's run through the guys who are declaring to go pro and would have been able to come back. Running back in Ty Davis Price. Their O-line, Ed Ingram, announced he's not coming back. And obviously we noted Deculus and Shanahan are done. On the D-line, you've got Farrell, Logan, and Anthony who are not coming back. On linebacker, Damone Clark announced he was turning pro. That would obviously be a big one because he did have a year of eligibility remaining, but nobody's shocked by that. He had an awesome season. He's striking while the iron's hot. This is where it gets sticky for me, Matty B. At cornerback, Stingley, Flott, Evans is out of eligibility, but Stingley and Flott are turning pro. Stingley, not surprised by. Flott, a lot of people are surprised by. Toss in that Eli Ricks is transferring to Alabama. And all three of your starters at cornerback this year are not going to be on the team this year, despite all three having eligibility remaining. So corner becomes an immediate thing I look at. We mentioned Lewis at safety. Then your specialist. Avery Atkins already said he was turning pro. Cade York has not said anything yet, but he's fully expected to go pro. He's an NFL kicker. He will be kicking on Sundays next year. When you listen to that, and then I'll give you this. You still have who haven't – they're draft eligible, but they haven't said anything. John Emery at running back, though he did tweet or put on Instagram that he was locked in with a little tiger emoji. So I guess that means he's not transferring and not going pro. Yeah. Chasen Hines committed to the NFLPA Bowl, but said, I can pull out of it if I want. I really haven't made a final decision. We'll see if that's true or not. Ali Gay at D end, Sony Fanu at D end, Baskerville at linebacker, Jared Small at linebacker, who got hurt this year, so he's got an extra year. And then Todd Harris at safety could technically come back for another year if he wanted to. When you hear all that, look at all that, what jumps off the page is, golly, they're going to have to fix that. Like, that's an immediate area of concern.
You talk about the defensive backs, and the defensive backs is obviously probably the main area when you look at it as far as Stingley, Flott, and Ricks goes. Not for nothing, losing Ali Gay and Sony Fanua, who I thought were really, really good defensive linemen, is going to take a hit to your depth, as long with Neil Farrell and Glenn Logan. So the depth of the defense line is going to be something they're going to have to replenish. There's a lot of areas they're going to have to replenish this year. Like, that's not a secret. Like, we know that this team is going to have to take serious steps forward in rebuilding. And that's why Brian Kelly is so high on trying to get players out the transfer portal, just to kind of bridge the gap a little bit, because there's only so much you can do in your first recruiting class, right? With players out of high school, because you don't have those relationships anymore. So that's going to be kind of the glue to this whole thing. And so, I mean, we haven't talked about, I mean, you mentioned it, Cade York and Avery Atkins. If you lose both of those two, you have specialists to replace, right? Or with either freshmen or transfers. So I think they're going to be fine at like receiver, running back, even if Emery goes or stays. I think they're going to be fine either way there. Quarterback, we know what they are at quarterback. So, and you return guys like Jack Besh at receiver. So I think you're really just looking at the secondary, and you're looking at depth across the board, defensive line, linebacker. I mean, linebacker depth. Like, do we even know what linebacker depth looks like at this point?
I mean, we've never – now, Josh White was hurt all year, but Sampa's been hurt, or, you know, maybe academics at times. Either way, he's been here a couple seasons and has never really played. Josh White we haven't seen really at all either. Granted, again, this year he was hurt the whole year. There was a time where walk-on Jared Small in the spring was like getting first team reps.
Yeah.
But then he got hurt for the whole year right before the UCLA game. So, I mean, they did go coast to coast with Baskerville and Clark. And then Mike Jones Jr. started playing some, and they kind of shifted up their philosophy, and he became a little bit more important piece. So Mike Jones Jr. and Greg Penn, who started in the bowl game, I would guess then are the top two options if Baskerville doesn't come back. If Baskerville does come back, he's obviously next. But I'm with you that linebacker would jump out immediately. Is you need help there, because not only do you need depth, you really don't even know who you're starting. I mean, you would presume Mike Jones and Greg Penn.
Yeah, I mean, that might be the easier game. Is what positions do you not need depth in at this point? I think it's probably, I guess, quarterback and running back, I'd say. I mean, Goodwin, Kiner kind of lead the charge there. So, I mean, receiver, I guess you feel pretty good at, but you obviously want as much receiving talent as possible with the players that you've lost this year, just as seniors, and Deion Smith as well. So, and Trey Palmer. So it's an uphill battle. I don't have the answers as far as how many transfer portal guys are going to get, but it feels like they're going to be filling up those seven at the very least.
Well, and then there was, we kind of figured this out through LSU's compliance, who had confirmed it, that they have 15 signees right now, 14,
okay.
And then you can sign 25 and then add seven more through the portal. But you can also, in this current crop of 25, sign transfers. So like, if they felt like it, they could sign 15 more transfers, really. Now they won't do that. There's still some high school players out there that will sign, but point being, you can go heavy in the transfer portal as much as you want. We've seen them hand out a bunch of offers. They've handed out receiver offers. They've handed out linebacker, offensive line, cornerback. You know, you go up and down the list, pretty much every position. I'll give you one that I'm curious of. And I just thought of this again because of what we talked about at the beginning with Mike Denbrock and Brian Kelly, that hell, they'll go to, they like to use two tight end sets at sometimes. LSU doesn't even have two tight ends on the team right now.
I was going
to
say.
You got Cole Taylor on scholarship, who sort of took a backseat to Jack Besh. And then when Jack Besh moved to receiver, Mashburn, the walk-on, started. And so once again, Cole Taylor was behind. So you've got Mashburn, who is a walk-on, former high school quarterback, and you've got Cole Taylor. And then they just signed Mason Taylor. So
yeah,
you've got three guys, but one's a true freshman. One in Cole Taylor is a guy that is probably more of a receiving threat. That's what he did in high school, certainly. So he's not like a pure blocker or any of that. And then Mashburn, who can just block for you. I'm wondering, looking at portal tight end or two, given how much they would like to use them in the offense. It's just, I know tight end's not the sexiest position to talk about. And we thought everyone got excited when Eric Gilbert signed, and then he lasted six or seven games. And everyone got excited when Jake Johnson, the number one tight end, was coming. And then he flips with his brother to A&M. So rough run on tight ends, bad fortune. I'm curious how they sort of fix that.
I mean, it's like, so the tight end position is interesting because I agree they need transfer portal tight ends, but they need transfer portal in a lot of areas. And while we've seen offers go out, as far as just social media goes, we've probably seen, what, 10, 12 offers, something like that in the portal?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. And it doesn't feel like they've been really serious offers, really, outside of Miles Frazier, right? Like,
kind of like guys that are like picked up 15 offers in 2 days type thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Like Jacob Cowing from UTEP. So I watch a lot of Conference USA football. Jacob Cowing from UTEP is a really, really good receiver. I'm at the G5 level. He's probably going to be a good pickup for Arizona, where he ended up going. But it's like, when I saw that offer, I was like, okay, yeah, they could use Jacob Cowing. And then it never really felt like anything subsidized off. It just feels like a lot of, I don't want to say empty offers, but it feels like a lot of offers where it's like, yeah, we're going to just put this one here, put this one here. And Miles Frazier, the one that, you know, they actually like went a little bit all in on, they end up getting. So I'm waiting for that kind of push right now. And you can maybe correct me if I'm wrong, but that's just what it feels like right now.
Yeah, I think that for sure. It seems like they press. I mean, they brought Frazier in on a visit and all that. Granted, we're in a dead period right now.
Yes.
We'll see who they bring in for visits when we get out of it. But maybe we just haven't seen either. Yeah, it's been a lot of offers. And maybe that's what you do. If you've got five or six receivers that you're like, okay, I like them, they're solid. And then they're getting offers from 15, 20 schools. All right, well, let's throw our hat in the mix with all of them and see which one of them kind of bites and is kind of serious about, all right, I am pretty interested in LSU. I could see it being that kind of approach, which is fine. And when you've got 15, 16 spots to fill and you know you got to go heavy in the portal, there's no reason really to not just throw. I mean, you can throw your hat into the name for every kid. And as you mentioned with the UTEP kid, if you ultimately say, we may be able to get someone a little better or whatever it might be, then you just don't press into commit. It's not a big deal. You've got the offer out there. That's at least got your foot in the door and you figure it out from there.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, we've already covered the players transferring out on previous podcasts. You went through the players without eligibility left. So that was good. I think we've covered pretty much all of the roster turnover.
And your transferring in would be Brennan, Miles Frazier from Florida International, the offensive tackle that we presume is a day one starter there, maybe even at left tackle. And then Slade Roy, the long snapper. We did not see Quentin Skinner, their scholarship long snapper, in the bowl game. So maybe that has something to do with it. But yeah, just three guys coming in so far. We'll obviously update you guys on what else we hear. Look, I guess we can just wrap up by saying we'll watch for how many guys, because that affects how many transfer guys they can take. How many more high school guys are they going to take? Well, Jacoby Matthews, the safety out of Ponchatoula, who had a great All-American week, is going to announce in February. Trevante Citizen, the running back out of Lake Charles, a top 10 running back, is going to announce in February. Both those guys have been committed to LSU before. Obviously, it was under the Orgeron regime, and then they decommitted. So do you get them back in the boat? Certainly, the staff will be working hard there in January with school visits and in-home visits and trying to get them on official visits. And Harold Perkins has been a popular linebacker name that's remained unsigned. He'll sign in February, but he committed to A&M this past weekend. So, you know, did they get anything there late trying to push him to get him on campus and change his mind? We'll see. And I know people talk about like tight end Danny Lewis at Westgate had a big state championship game. He had been committed to Cincinnati, where Den Brock is coming from. Do they make a move on him? But I don't think you're getting beyond, at least in Louisiana, you know, 3, 4, maybe 5 guys that you offer, and maybe you get a few of them, and maybe a couple others stick with what they're doing or whatever it might be. So I'd expect them to sign that, you know, 3, 4, 5 more high school players, and don't, you know, no need to reach on anybody. Don't just offer a guy that you don't really think will maybe ever even play, or as a super long-term guy. Feel good about the guys you want, and then just go into the portal. When the dead period ends, who do they start bringing in? Because that changes it from, hey, we offered you, to, hey, we're really serious and we want you to commit. So come to campus with your family and spend time around us and check it out. That's when we'll know kind of who they're really serious about the portal. But I will say early on, if they needed a long snapper, I mean, good job of taking one, the East Carolina kid and Slade Roy, but a quarterback and a left tackle, and a quarterback being Brennan, who is only here for 1 year, so he's not scaring off the quarterbacks behind him. Yeah. He gives Nuss and Howard some time to develop. And then a left tackle in Miles Frazier, who PFF, Pro Football Focus, had at the end of the year as the highest graded offensive lineman in the country. So you'll take those two. It kind of reminds me of, if the recruiting class is falling apart and you still have Will Campbell and Walker Howard, you kind of feel good about it, right? Those are your 5 stars in Louisiana. And I love Emory Jones and Wiggins, a lot of other guys, but that was sort of just the rhetoric was, those guys never wavered, and that made you feel good. I think to start out the portal, the fact that you got a quarterback that starts next year and a left tackle that starts next year, that you both know what you're going to get out of them, I think is a really nice start.
Yeah, no, you're right. That is a good start. And while that does make me feel a little bit better, I still just look at this depth chart sheet that I got, I think the first day of practice you gave me. And I still have it, and I'm just like, all right, there's some holes to fill still. So
did you run out of ink scratching everything out?
Oh yeah. So this is like, I haven't touched this probably since like week 7 or 8. I actually don't even know what you can see right now. Yeah, I haven't touched like week 7 or 8, and you see Andre Anthony, Ali Gay, Eli Ricks, Derek Stingley, just all these names crossed out. And so it was that type of year, to say the least.
And we'll talk about this more on the board. We're done with this podcast and more on later podcasts. But people are in this debate right now of, is this like, is LSU back in the, like, fighting for the playoffs next year, back competing for the West next year? Is this some like total rebuild? And maybe you can argue it's somewhere in between. And I'll just leave my thought here short and simple. You were 5-5 2 years ago. You're 6-7 this year. That's 500 football, including the first losing season since 99. There's a reason they've cleaned house and fired Ed Orgeron 3 years after a national championship, whatever it would be, 2019 to now, and brought in Brian Kelly and allowed him to have autonomy to hire this complete staff. It's because you recognize this isn't something that's going to get fixed immediately. We need to have a total, not just total rebuild, but at least someone come in and put their mark on this program. And if I'm Brian Kelly, I'm doing the Kim Mulkey approach. And it's, when I'm asked, how good are y'all going to be this year? And this is what she said before the season. Yeah. Granted, they're 14-2, so it works out great for her and everybody loves her. But she was asked, okay, what's the expectation for this year? And she said, improvement. She said, okay, well, like, how many wins does that mean? And she said, well, how many did LSU win last year? 9? Okay, well, then we'll win 10. That's all I can promise.
Yeah.
And I can win you one more game than they did before, and then we'll see where it goes from there. So if I'm Brian Kelly, and he ain't going to go out there putting out picks, but I'm saying, we'll win at least 7 games, and we'll see how far it goes beyond that. But maybe more importantly, we're going to rebuild this roster. We're going to retain guys. We're going to reset the culture. We're going to have guys not academically ineligible across the board, where you're going to the bowl game with 39 guys. And if you've instilled that sort of new approach to the program and you win 7-8 games, you're going to win more than that the next year, because you've now pushed yourself back into the right direction. So we'll have plenty of time this offseason to debate how good they'll be next year. We don't even know what the roster will look like, so it's sort of too early to do that. But I do think this is – I'm not carrying any sort of expectation that this is some double-digit win team, if they are great. But I think there's a reason that if the roster is really where it's at, and we're seeing it, and academics are where they're at, and perhaps that is then affected into the spring and into the summer – it's not going to happen just like that. You know, you snap your fingers and everything sticks. So give it time, patience, LSU fans. I know that's not easy coming off a couple of lackluster seasons, but what you're hoping here is that you have some improvement next year and then you see where it goes from there. Because as we've noted in the podcast already, Brian Kelly and Nick Saban have the two best win percentage across college football. He knows what he's doing. Whether that happens in year one, maybe, maybe not. He's probably not taking over a roster that was just depleted, but the future appears to be in good hands, at least if you're asking Scott Woodward, who paid him a lot of money to come in here and get the job done.
Yep. I couldn't have said it better myself. And not for nothing, this SEC West, it looks like it's getting better by the day. I mean, Ole Miss, Mississippi
State. Zach Evans, Ole Miss.
Yep. Yep. Texas A&M's continue to improve. Alabama, like we've talked about. So it's not going to be easy for LSU, even if they do hit their ceiling next year. It will be hard every single game in the SEC. So, you know, you take it for what it is and you instill your culture and you just go from there. I don't have expectations for next year yet. Maybe ask me come like June and I'll be out here yelling for 9 wins. Who knows? But
yeah, there you go.
But that is all we have for y'all today. We appreciate y'all joining us. If you are listening on Spotify, feel free to follow, send to a friend. On Apple, send us a leave us a 5-star rating and review. Check us out at go247.com. Check us out on our board. If you're not a VIP subscriber, you can become one for $1 for the first month. So take advantage of that deal. Shay, myself, and the entire staff, thanks y'all for joining us, and we'll talk to y'all later.
This is Tony Kornheiser's show. I'm Tony. You expected someone else? So what exactly is the show about? I don't know. It's a sports show nominally. Football's over, but we're finally at a point where things matter in college basketball, and baseball season is on deck. Greatest three words in the English language, pitchers and catchers. We have some of the best voices come on and explain what matters or what makes an upset, like Ryan does, 9-8. No, that's not an upset. No, yeah, it is, Bob. And if you're lucky, I might just tell you about my search for discounted sleep pants or my worries about what my dog just ate. Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.